Welcome to CCC's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally. CCC began this podcast in 2006, before there were iPhones and iPads, a time before Twitter, and of course, long before Zoom. The world has changed in a decade and a half, and now Beyond the Book is changing too. Beginning in January 2021, CCC's podcast name becomes Velocity of Content. Velocity of Content is CCC's platform for thought leaders and industry experts operating at the speed of content to share new ideas, observations, and knowledge. We're changing the name to Velocity of Content, but you don't have to change your listening habits. Stay right here to stay on top of emerging industry trends and challenges. Thanks for listening. And now, I hope you will enjoy this episode of Velocity of Content, CCC's podcast series. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally. It's Friday, December 11th, 2020. Every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news and analysis on books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again today. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Last week, Andrew, you reported for us on the End of Book Expo, once the largest trade book publishing event in North America. And again this week, there is more bad news from the same front. The Frankfurt Book Fair has closed its New York office and has cut loose its staff.
Yeah, so I think sad news to hear that for many of us in the book business. You know, we all knew the personnel from the Frankfurt Book Fair office here in New York. As you say, we learned this week that they're going to be closing its New York office at the end of the year after more than two decades of having a presence here in New York City. And you know, I suppose the news was not unexpected. It comes in the wake of an announcement last month in November that the Frankfurt Book Fair was going to be making some changes for 2021 and that was going to include some layoffs in the wake of the pandemic.
So perhaps this is not unexpected news. Certainly, it is not welcome news, especially now at the holidays and amid another surge of coronavirus, and most especially for those who put in so many years working for the German Book Office.
Yeah, and including two big names working for the fair, include like Thomas Minkus, for example, who served as president of the New York office as well as in a number of other leadership roles. He's going to be leaving the Frankfurt Book Fair. In an email, Minkus said that the layoffs were necessary because, obviously, of the pandemic's impact. But this is a big deal because it suggests just how much the financial impact is being felt among the publishing industry from this pandemic. And I say that because Thomas Minkus has been with Frankfurt for 20 years. And, you know, not just any 20 years. The last 20 years, you may have noticed, has been pretty intense, especially for the book business, right? We remember when digital was going to end the Frankfurt Book Fair and end the book business as well? Well, not so much. That didn't really happen. And, you know, the pandemic, did just end a 20-year career. So what does that tell you? It also ended the New York office for the Frankfurt Book Fair after 22 years. It was previously known as the German Book Office. It was rebranded back in 2017, and I expected it to be around for a long time. Now, I don't think the Frankfurt Book Fair as an institution is in danger, but it is just another example of how the book business, and really the whole world, of course, is going to have to rethink the way it does some things in the wake of COVID-19.
Indeed, and like many fairs, the Frankfurt Book Fair did hold an online event this year in place of the canceled physical fair, and by most accounts, that went pretty well. This kind of hybrid programming probably holds some clues to what the future of book fairs will look like, no?
I think that's exactly right. You know, with the public included, the Frankfurt Book Fair usually hosts more than 300,000 visitors and like 140,000 or 150,000 trade visitors. Well, Frankfurt officials said that, more than 200,000 people, professionals, accessed the fair's website this year. And the consumer-facing BookFest, that was another the Frankfurt Book Fair's public-facing program, attracted 1.5 million viewers on Facebook alone. And those are pretty robust engagement numbers for sure. Now, of course, Frankfurt is a rights fair too. And normally you'd have 700 or 800 agents tops working in the rights center. That's usually the number of tables that they'll sell. They sell out every year and they seem to hit a new record every year. Well, the digital rights platform at the Frankfurt Book Fair saw over 4,000 signups this year. So I think it's fair to say that nothing really replaces being together face-to-face in these kinds of publishing events. But I think, too, that the world has changed. And the next few years, we're going to have to really build on what we've learned from this forced digital experiment. You know, Frankfurt officials say the book fair is going to be supplemented by digital and virtual formats. But I think what we're going to see over the next few years is how much, you know, the physical fairs are going to be supplemented and how much are going to be supplanted by digital.
And your boss, PW editorial director Jim Milliot, penned an editorial lamenting the end of Book Expo in his farewell letter. Jim wonders what the publishing business will be missing.
Yeah, a really great piece. And, you know, the reaction to it has actually been strong. So I was glad to see that. But basically, Jim quotes Joni Mitchell, noting that you don't know what you got till it's gone. And while the piece points out all the gripes and the issues that people had with Book Expo and, you know, how the show changed over the years, it was better than not having a show at all, right? You know, we'll see what the future holds for Book Expo, whether it comes back or not, or what other organizations like ABA, for example, might jump in to fill the void left by no longer having a Book Expo. But I take Jim's point, and that's that, you know, people complained about Book Expo every year, but are enough people going to complain now that the show is going to come back in some form? That'll be interesting to see, because I think it's a statement on the future of the book business that the world's largest book market and arguably the publishing capital of the world, New York City, is without a place for industry officials to come together. We don't have a show here anymore. You know, in the wake of COVID-19, we can understand why we're not going to have a show in 2021 for Book Expo. But after that, if we don't have a show in New York City, I think it becomes more about the industry than a question of public health or safety.
So I'm happy to say that there is news other than of the bad kind this week. A report in the online news site The Hill, which, as the name suggests, covers Washington and politics. Reporter Rebecca Clark revealed that Amazon Publishing was in talks with an upstart library group, the Digital Public Library of America, to make Amazon's ebook catalog available in public libraries. Now, you've written for PW about why that is such a big deal. Tell us more.
Right. So a real surprise to me and to many librarians and industry observers when The Hill, of all places, broke news last week that Amazon was in talks with the Digital Public Library of America to make its ebook content available. The piece left a lot of questions. So I got on the phone and I started looking for some answers. And indeed, it was confirmed for me from both Amazon and DPLA officials that a deal could be done soon.
Well, this is your beat, Andrew, so I have to ask, any idea how The Hill came up with this story?
Good old-fashioned reporting by The Hill, right? And it's a case of, you know, you never know what you're going to get when you start asking questions. So, you know, basically it went down like this. The Hill contacted Amazon regarding a petition that launched in late November that urged Congress to pursue an antitrust investigation as well as legislative action to preserve and expand the library services against Amazon. Our listeners will recall that Amazon currently doesn't make its digital content available to libraries under any terms. And we've discussed on this show how that exclusion has rankled librarians who have loudly criticized that for years and even brought it to the attention of lawmakers in an ALA report last year. The petition was created by a digital advocacy group called Fight for the Future. It's a great group. They've done some good work on net neutrality, for example. And it garnered about 13,000 signatures, enough to get the attention of a Hill reporter. And when that Hill reporter asked Amazon for comment on the petition, Amazon uncharacteristically shared a little news, a little private info, catching everyone by surprise, including the DPLA, it turns out, by telling The Hill that, hey, nothing really to see here with this petition because we're actually in talks right now to make our ebooks available.
So what is the scoop on this scoop?
So I spoke with the Digital Public Library of America's Michelle Kimpton, who's been leading these talks for DPLA. And what I learned is, you know, first and foremost, the discussions cover Amazon Publishing titles only. Amazon Publishing is, of course, an arm of the company that functions much like a traditional publisher. The talks do not include titles from Amazon's KDP program, for example. So, you know, no library collections of self-published books from that program. And more importantly, The talks don't include Audible, which is, of course, Amazon's market-leading digital audiobook service. And that has really rankled librarians because, you know, Audible doesn't make its exclusive content available to libraries at all, but also it works to sign up other publishers, for example, Blackstone, to impose 3-month exclusives on their content, meaning that libraries can't get content from other publishers either that have entered into these deals with Audible. Of course, Amazon is heavily invested in a subscription model for books and reading. You know, they have Audible and Kindle Unlimited, for example. But I had to ask, and I was told that a subscription model for libraries have not been part of these talks. In other words, there's not going to be any curated Amazon collections for one price, for example, for public library access. But what's interesting here, though, is that all the titles under discussion for this deal would be licensed EPUB editions managed by the DPLA and its partner libraries and made accessible to patrons via the Digital Public Library of America's Simply E platform. And that's a huge departure for Amazon, no matter how you slice it, you know, because it's going to be working outside of its proprietary Kindle platform. And the significance of that means that library users won't have to go through Amazon to access the titles, and Amazon therefore won't capture specific user data, which libraries value. Privacy is a big issue for libraries. Amazon won't be able to capture user data, which of course is a key part of its business.
And you reported for PW that a potential deal would also be a major coup for Simply E and the Digital Public Library of America's growing ebook platform. They call it the DPLA Exchange. Tell us why that's the case.
Yeah, a huge coup, no question, because in order to license Amazon publishing titles, libraries would need to use the DPLA Exchange, and patrons would need to deploy the Simply E app to access them. So rather than market-leading Overdrive, for example, or the Libby app, which is Overdrive's app, or any of the other services in the sector, you'd have to go through the DPLA Exchange. And for an upstart service like DPLA, that's going to force a lot of people to, you know, sign up. You know, as a refresher, the DPLA launched its exchange in 2017. It's a nonprofit, library-based solution to procuring and providing ebook access and digital audio as well. And, you know, I remember in 2017, or was it 2018? I can't remember exactly. New York Public Library's digital guy, Tony Agee, explained why the DPLA decided to jump in and start its own platform to compete with the likes of Overdrive. And basically, he said, because they wanted to directly connect publishers and libraries in the digital market. You know, Overdrive, he said, has done great work pioneering the library ebook market to this point. But with a library-centric business, you know, a library-centered exchange here, well, you know, libraries will take it from here, they say. The DPLA Exchange currently offers about 500,000 digital titles to libraries, which are accessible only via its Simply E app. And it's entered into, you know, agreements with, I think, like 60 publishers so far, including some content from the Big Five. Now, Michelle Kimpton acknowledged that landing Amazon would be a huge boost for DPLA and their developing ebook service. But she also told me that the deal was not being designed to function as some kind of exclusive. She's not apologizing for that being the case at the moment because she told me she believes DPLA best represents the interests of libraries. But at the end of the day, she expects, and you know, if this happens, if Amazon titles are available on all the major vendor platforms, well, that's a great thing for libraries as well. And I do expect that at some point that will be the case if this initial deal with DPLA comes to fruition. There are, of course, a lot of details to be ironed out. Nothing is done yet. I don't have any more of those details. I'm still fishing around at the moment. But I can say this, you know, the deal with Amazon could really change the trajectory of the ebook lending market for publishers and for libraries. This is a big deal if it gets done.
And just how would this deal change the trajectory of the library ebook market exactly? Only recently, Amazon was the subject of a petition calling for Congress to intervene against their business.
Yeah, right. You know, in a few ways. First, pricing. If Amazon comes in and starts offering lower library ebook prices than the major publishers now offer, that would ramp up pressure on publishers, right, to change their pricing. You know, we've talked about many times on this show how librarians have long complained and pointed out that the library ebook prices offered by the major publishers now are simply unsustainable. And I'm sure DPLA is making this case to Amazon in their discussions. And given Amazon's history of, you know, playing, you know, got your nose with the publishers, you know, know, Amazon's past efforts too, that they love to make book prices lower, right? So let's just say I'm curious about the price points that are going to come out of these talks. You know, one way for Amazon to really raise its profile would be to make its titles easily accessible through libraries, you know, especially now when digital lending is surging in the wake of the pandemic. And the other thing that comes up is that in terms of access and licensing models, the big five, they mostly offer one kind of model, right? It's basically like a lend limited 2-year deal. Maybe there's a pay-per-use model for some, but librarians say that that option is usually too expensive for them to be useful. Well, DPLA, one of the things it's done so far in its short history is it's been instrumental in exploring ways to make more digital content available under a range of new licensing models. Over the past year, DPLA has struck deals with a number of publishers, Workman, Abrams, Independent Publishers Group, IPG, for example, to offer three licensing models simultaneously, including a 40-lend bundle that would allow up to 10 concurrent users, an unlimited one-at-a-time model, and a model that would allow 5 concurrent loans at a reduced price. These models give librarians what they have long said they want most in the digital market, and that's flexibility, something that will allow them to more efficiently manage their digital resources. And Amazon apparently is on board with offering all of these multiple models simultaneously for publishers, or excuse me, for libraries to go back and forth between. And again, if that happens, it would probably put pressure on the major publishers to re-examine or reevaluate their lending models.
Not to sound cynical, but is this Amazon being Amazon, or is this for real?
Well, that is the right question. You know, in a statement that I got from Amazon, they said that, you know, they love libraries, you know, right? And their print books have always been available to libraries. Okay, well, they don't really love libraries. Otherwise, you know, they'd already be in the library ebook market, right? We wouldn't still be talking about this a decade after library ebook lending debuted. And you know, anytime someone asks a question about digital access, which I did, and you respond that, well, you can always get our print books, that's a sign that you really haven't engaged at the same time, too. In fact, librarians hate that response. When they ask you about ebooks and you tell them to go check out the print, well, they just can't stand that response. It's just the apples and oranges. And the major publishers, I'll point out, have used that response as well over the years. But already some observers are questioning whether the DPLA is, you know, this deal between Amazon and the DPLA is a clever way for Amazon to sort of counter the criticism it's getting over its refusal to work with libraries thus far without really getting in too deep. After all, you know, just a small fraction of libraries are currently on the DPLA exchange, and Simply E is still relatively in its relatively early days in terms of its uptake. But I'm going to take Michelle Kimpton at her word. You know, I asked her about this, you know, how would she characterize Amazon's approach to these talks? And she said, you know, the people that she's been dealing with since spring are passionate about libraries and authors, and that she expects a deal to be done soon. So stay tuned.
Indeed, passionate about libraries and authors. You know, I guess you have to admit that halfway is not a word in the vocabulary of the people at Amazon. And Andrew Albanese, thank you indeed for joining me today on today's program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, in the final weeks of the year, this program is looking back at the past 12 months. The COVID-19 pandemic presents opportunities to explore important questions in medicine and other sciences. In publishing, too, economic and professional disruption is opening new paths for information access. In the first edition of a 3-part review for 2020, we learn why data analyst may be the year's hot job title. Medical researcher and author David Fagenbaum says that we can all play a role.
We've got people that are non-scientists. We call them citizen scientists, who are part of this crowdsourcing effort to pull the data together. And we have people who are practicing social distancing to make life a little bit easier, and others who are helping to get PPE. So it doesn't matter what your background is. I think it's really important, you know, to use that same analogy, so, you know, we can all be a part of this game.
The devil is in the data. Next on CCC's podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to this program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon for another podcast from CCC.